This is CliffCentral.com.
Over to Anthea now for a little look at your finances. Anthea always brings us the latest in what's going on in the economy, what kinds of things you need to look for at the stock market, where that rolls around. And this morning, she is resplendent in all her figures and notes, her very lovely little iPad, which has a pink cover on it.
Resplendent.
Yeah, she is. She's resplendent. So here she is, just for you, Anthea Gardner.
Nice keyboard action.
Shut up. I just learned to do this. I still get at least one version of your song every week from somebody. Somewhere. Someone somewhere has a version of your song every week.
And it still makes us smile and dance in studio.
Yes. So she works hard for your money. How's our money looking this morning?
I'm afraid not good. Last week was very disappointing.
We heard the election was a stable outcome. The ANC retained power. This is what people like Peter Bruce promised us would bring us much happiness and abundance and a fruition of all of our promises and hopes.
I'm sorry to disappoint. And yeah, I think the market was looking for an ANC win of between 57 and 58%, which they got.
They're really particular, huh? That's exactly the number they were looking for.
That was kind of
57 and 58, otherwise the Rand is fucked.
That was kind of our base case scenario. Anything less than that, and we would have been a bit worried. Okay. I mean, that's kind of based on polls and based on chatting to people.
Sure.
So, okay. But I think it was last week, you know, we were closed on Wednesday, obviously, and then Thursday was the biggest negative day so far this year, and that was nothing to do with our elections. That was more to do with global markets, and this is now all about the Trump and China trade, right?
Yeah, the trade war that's looming.
That's right, which he kept on threatening last week, and finally on Friday implemented. So as of Friday, 6 o'clock.
Does this mean he's put tariffs on that $200 billion dollars of Chinese imports?
He's raised it from 10% to 25%. Right. So things that will be more expensive for the U.S. consumer, smartwatches, Bluetooth devices, chemicals used in manufacturing textiles, health and safety products, bicycle helmets.
Oh.
Yeah, I just had to throw that in there. Child safety furniture, all these sorts of things. Suddenly, the U.S. consumer is now going to be paying more for. The importer is going to be paying more for. And the question is whether or not the importer can pass on and how much of that tariff increase the importer can pass on to the consumer.
Now, this is where I've got to tell you that Donald Trump is being a moron. And you know, I've been vocal about how he's delivered on all his promises, and he has tried to bring industry back to America from China. He's created a bunch of jobs, but I don't think being in favor of tariffs, which are essentially government manipulation of the free market, I don't think that fits with what else he's doing. And I think he's got this idea that tariffs are good. And they never are, right?
No, they never are. We've spoken about this before, right? Remember in the 1930s, the Smoot-Hawley Act, which we
have spoken about it before. But only you remember.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
And the Smoot-Hawley Act.
Yeah, you just got it wrong.
Which we believe was the catalyst for the Depression. So, okay.
No, what's your feeling on tariffs? It's never really a good idea.
No,
it's market manipulation.
Exactly. I absolutely think that's right, and I don't like it at all. I think Donald Trump, he's just a bad negotiator, and he's just...
But he did. They ordered the deal. What are you talking about, Anthony?
Have you seen his taxes?
The deal. Are you crazy?
All right, go on.
So I kind of hope that he's president for a second term, because I think policy takes about 2 years for the impact to really take effect on the economy, and I almost want him to see what he's been doing. You're like, well, I want him to be president for a second term if he doesn't create a global war, I mean World War III, because that's the other thing. He's not a very good negotiator. In fact, I'm reading a book, Woodward's book, Fear, Trump in the White House, and it is so fascinating, and I don't enjoy reading politics, but it's fascinating to see how the White House staffers actually handle him and how they take things off his desk that they don't believe should be passed. And, oh, it's crazy, really. The man has no idea what he's doing.
Well,
sounds like a juicy book, though.
Yeah, that Bob Woodward book.
It's a hard read. Like, you have to get to know
the... received a lot of attention.
35 people in the cabinet. Who cares?
And they keep changing, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, since the book was written, some of those people aren't around anymore. Anyway, yes. So there's a Chinese-American trade war, and it's hitting the whole world hard.
Yeah.
Thanks very much
and
for that.
And Asia's down again this morning, so I suspect we'll be down again this morning.
Right.
And then locally, we had mining and manufacturing data released on Thursday. Mining contracted and manufacturing expanded, which I guess is kind of good news. Mining contracted by 1.1%, which is not as bad as the negative 7% we were expecting. So that's kind of okay. Gold sector was probably the largest negative. And then conversely, coal was, which has the highest weighting, in fact, lifted by almost 6%. So that's not bad. And I think this mining is also going to depend on global demand and Eskom, because, you know, mines use almost 30% of Eskom electricity. And if Eskom, now that elections are finished, can't produce enough electricity, then it will impact on mining production. Mm. So, yeah. And, of course, global softening sentiment, U.S. trade wars, people worried they're not going to buy, they're not going to put in orders unnecessarily if they think trade is going to slow.
Okay.
So all the way down to that, right? Back to Donald Trump and his trade war. And then manufacturing rose by 1.2% year on year after February's 0.5% increase. So that was quite nice. Yeah. Only 5 of the 10 sectors experienced growth, though. So, you know, it wasn't an outright win. It was kind of negligible. And then a couple of companies in the news. MTN released a quarterly update last week. It definitely looks like their new CEO, well, not so new anymore, is he, Rob Shooter, has his feet comfortably under the desk. They increased revenue and customer growth by 10% year-on-year and 9% year-on-year, respectively. Yep, that's very good, right? Mm. Net 4 million new subscribers.
Sure.
So that's quite impressive. In these updates, they don't disclose EBITDA, so they don't give all the numbers. But what they did say that was South Africa's margin was flat, Nigeria's margin widened to 2.4%, and that's actually good. So I think that what that shows is that they're delivering positive operating leverage. And then the big thing, of course, is this asset realization or selling off assets to get cash in to strengthen their balance sheet, which is a big thing. So they listed this company, Jumia, which is supposed to be Africa, the Amazon of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't account for it in their equity position, so I think they're going to write it off next year. And then the Nigeria MTN listing is still going ahead. It should be now soon, actually.
See, this is the problem with Nigeria. Is you expose yourself to a huge market of potential customers and obviously enormous growth that you couldn't compete with anywhere else in Africa just because of the numbers. But you also expose yourself to the vagaries of their market and their very, very capricious government, who will, at a moment's notice, drop some kind of clangor on you that you suddenly owe them $1 billion.
$2 billion, yeah. Remember that, I mean, big fine.
You know, so you want to expose yourself to the market, but you don't want to expose yourself to the government.
So difficult.
Very
eh?
Tough. Yeah. Very, very tough.
MTN did actually say they're making very slow progress on this $2 billion court case, this fine that they're going through. It is a problem. But hopefully listing Nigeria will give them a smaller stake in the MTN Nigeria and make it more, what's the word, more fair? I don't know, like... not as exposed to as the main shareholder, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So if Nigerians themselves are now shareholders in MTN Nigeria,
they'll tell the government to behave a little
bit. Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
Good luck with that one.
Okay. All right.
Well, what about Mondi and Sappi, two paper companies?
Yes, two paper companies, same sector, very different though. Mondi's EBITDA was 16% up year on year. Great number.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of things there though. So Mondi guided that they would be closing down some of their plants for maintenance to the tune of 150 million euros and spread over the full year. And in fact, they didn't do that. They said the first half would be 90 million euros. And it wasn't. It was only like 35 or something. And so if you normalize kind of the earnings numbers out for the full year, then growth wasn't exactly 16. It was actually only 7%, which is still not a bad number in this environment, I believe. But the paper market is definitely a bit weaker, a bit disappointing. I don't know. Mondi, I mean, I thought the share, it was a decent number, so I thought the share would have been up on the day, but it was actually down. And partly, I think that was to do with Sappi reporting. Shocking. Sappi's numbers were just, they really were awful. EBITDA was down 11%. So compare down 11% to up 16%.
You know, they both make the same thing.
Well, they don't really. Mondi is more containerboard. It's different, whereas Sappi is kind of your magazine paper, your fine plastic-coated, that kind of.
And so those guys are not doing so well because there's no market for that.
That's right. So
there's a market, but it's small.
Think cardboard packaging and what do you call the food boxes, food containers, that sort of thing. So very different, yeah. And then the other problem with Sappi is that they've always said they've got this like Sappi 2020 vision that everybody's looking forward to. We have that will add 10% to EBITDA. To earnings. We've not seen a single strategic move, you know, and this is stuff like moving vertically into hemp products or like further down the chain production, what they call VSF, which is viscose staple fiber. But they haven't done anything with it, so very disappointing. Right. Yeah.
Okay, and then just Uber. We're talking about poor old Travis Kalanick. What's happening with him?
So Uber IPO'd on Friday. Yes. Finally, this highly touted, yay.
How did it go?
I mean, ridiculous valuations last year, remember? And there were valuations of like $250 billion last year.
Yeah, what did it end up being?
About 70-something. Okay. $70 billion.
Still, it's a fortune.
It's big, right? So the share was down 8% on Friday from IPO. But they kind of their timing was a bit bad because Lyft also, remember, you know Lyft, their competitor, Lyft also reported on Wednesday and they reported a shocking number. I mean, that was just absolutely disgusting. In fact, Lyft was down 11% on Wednesday. The company, none of them.
Disgusting, Anthea.
Mm. What?
It was absolutely disgusting. The numbers.
Yeah, the numbers are pretty shocking. So the problem is these guys are not making money. They're not making profits. Lyft's revenue was up 95% to $776 million, and they still made a loss.
How? What are they spending on?
So this, they said, was mainly due to stock-based compensation, payroll tax, taxes and costs related to their IPO and expenses.
Sounds like it's, yeah, I mean, by now you should have figured out the profit structure, yeah.
Exactly.
Surely.
So I think these companies are getting huge valuations, huge, ridiculous, crazy value, like nosebleed valuations.
And they can't justify them.
They can't justify it. And their moats, their competitive edge is not as strong as people think it is. So, you know, when Uber came to market, like, oh, it was great, first of its kind. Mm. And then there's Uber Delivery, Uber Eats, and. But the competition, there's Taxify, there's Lyft, there's a couple of others. There's another one I got told about the other day in South Africa, which I didn't know about, and I can't remember the name now. But apparently it's much cheaper. The problem is, though, that they don't check or they don't do verification on their drivers as well as Uber does. So a little bit dangerous, I suppose. You won't be using it.
So was Travis invited to the listing?
No. So this is the big drama with the Uber listing on Friday is that the new CEO, and I really struggle to say his name, Karau Shahari.
Right. He's friends with Pete Buttigieg.
Where's Ben when I need him? Ben, come have a look here. So the CEO did not invite Travis Kalanick to ring the bell on the Newark Stock Exchange.
Drama. But that's tradition. They do that with everybody, right?
Imagine you started a company, it listed, and you weren't invited to ring the bell. Heartbreaking.
All right.
Anyway. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy.
Well, you've never liked him.
No.
You've never liked him, so that's fine. Yeah. Okay, thanks very much. Anything else you want to throw in there?
No, I think it's going to be a quiet week. Our first full week for I don't know how long.
I know. Let's hope productivity increases proportionately. Thank you so much, Anthea.
Pleasure. Right, have a good week.
Anthea Gardner, working hard for your money. She'll be back in a week's time.
This is CliffCentral.com.